as a planet, Earth, anybody? We are sending messages into outer space to extraterrestrials. Basically, we're saying, hey, if you're out there, come on, here's where we are, come on down. And I think that's a bad idea. And I'll tell you why. Because if they're out there, first of all, we can't go there. They're smarter than us if they can come here, right? We couldn't go. I think they're out there and they know where we are and they're like, well, let's wait till they find us. But even if they called us tomorrow and said, hey, here we are, come on up, we would have to say, well, how about we meet you on the moon? Because, yeah, that's as far as we can go is the moon. And we can only send three guys. Right. And one of them has to wait in the car. So, yeah.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Monday, April 17th, 2023. Got nothing to count down. You got to figure out something to count down. Maybe we'll count down 420 or something, which is coming up in a couple of days. How you doing, kids? You are at jcontheline.com. It is the easiest thing in the world to do when you watch somebody on television. Okay, so that could be coaches of professional or college or whatever sport that we watch. Guy screws up on the job, everybody sees it. We post a lot of stuff on my Facebook page, the Showgram with JC Corcoran, of people on television doing insanely incompetent things. And again, it's on television, everybody sees it. Politician goes on television, says something that is wrong or a lie, and all the journalists sit there and go, oh, we checked that after he said it, and the darndest thing happened. It turned out that it was all bullshit. And then, of course, it leads us to the weather guys. The weather guys say it's going to be partly sunny tomorrow for your picnic, and it rains holy hell, and you know, hail is falling out of the sky. Well, let me just tell you something. I've done this, by the way, being the weather geek that I am, Twister Boy, as you know. So I sat there a couple of different times over the course of the last 20 or 30 years, and for a month sat there and actually tracked the weather forecasts to see how accurate they were, because everybody claims they get the most accurate forecast. And what does that mean anyhow? You know, what does that mean anyhow? The most accurate. If you live in Bethalto, Illinois, your weather forecast is going to be different than you're in Troy, Missouri. All right. And both of those towns are in the television, what they call ADI, area of dominant influence. It's in the St. Louis market. Same thing. If you're watching television, you're watching Channel 2 weather in Sullivan, Missouri, that's going to be a lot different than if you're in Greenville, Illinois. You know, it's a wide area and the storms don't, cover everything. And snow is when we get into real trouble, because that's our fault. And I got a strong case to make here for that, because as soon as there is any mention of the possibility of a snowstorm happening in St. Louis, everybody immediately is like, tell me how much and when. I want to know now. Dude, it's Monday. The storm's not going to be here till Friday. I don't care. I want to know. How much? 2 inches? 10 inches? 20 inches? What are we getting? And the problem is snowstorms especially, rain's a little bit easier, but snowstorms especially, are almost impossible to predict on that level 4 or 5 days out. It's like Dave always says, these things got to clear the Rockies. The Rockies tear up a lot of storms that look really, really impressive when they're developing off the Pacific coast and then into the Southwest. And then they sort of swing around to a loop-de-loop and come up right up 44 towards St. Louis. But until they make that turn and get over the mountains, it's ridiculous to even attempt to make a prediction about how much and when. This is why I point this out, because I don't know even what day it was. I know it was at least 3 days in advance last week where they were saying, I better watch out because this thing on Saturday night could really be a problem. And we got people coming out of the baseball game, day game with the Cardinals. Boy, that game Saturday blew, didn't it? And then, you know, you got the soccer team playing, 7:30. And the other guys are like, ew, that's not good because that's right about the time this thing is going to hit. This is like 3 days in advance. And sure enough, exactly what happened. And in fact, we had seven tornadoes. Seven. I was looking at the storm track of that one. The one that came closest to St. Louis. Let me just look at this. Yeah, here it is. Here it is right here. Well, no, there's one that went from Belleville and then up towards St. Clair in like a 45-degree angle. So that's one of them. That was an EF1. But there was another one that was down like near Peavely, and that was one of the big problems. But the point is this. The weather guys nailed it. They absolutely nailed this one. Right down to the fact that there was going to be a massive cold snap that they thought it would be low 50s. And yesterday morning at 11 o'clock, I was like, it's 44 in St. Louis. They're supposed to play ball in like 2 hours. This is 44 degrees. Meanwhile, it was 88 in Central Florida. 44 plus 44 equals 88. I rest my case. But seven total tornadoes. And the men and the women who do the weather forecasting were right on top of it. You know, that's what I was trying to say as I was leading into the story. You're going to go to work today. Maybe you're already there. And at some point, maybe this week, you'll screw something up. Somebody you work with is going to screw something up. A lot of times it's not anything major. Sometimes it is. A lot of times, though, it's not anything major, but you screw up. So what? The only people who know about it are the people who are on your team or your close compadres in whatever it is that you do for a living. Now, have that same screw up in your office, but do it on TV where everybody knows about it, everybody can see it, and everybody can point at you and pelt you with rocks and garbage. You have a tremendous advantage. As my dad used to say, the higher up you are on the ladder, the more of your ass is exposed. Thanks, Dad. Tomorrow's tax day.
I add column 3 to column 4 and look up tax table to compute fiduciary.
Yeah. My taxes are done. I sent them in Saturday morning, I think it was. So still got to sign everything. But boy, do I hate that. I hate that process of putting together tax stuff. Oh, man. And you're always tempted to cheat. You know, you're always tempted to cheat or to skirt a little bit. And I will not speak any further on this. On this topic, okay? I'm gonna go there, and this will upset a lot of people, but I'm telling you, time is on my side here, and in, I don't know, a year or two, you're gonna probably say, you know what, Corcoran was right when he said that. The move to have Chip Carey in the broadcast booth for the Cardinals games has not been an upgrade. It has not been an upgrade. It has been a big upgrade. Chip Carey is hitting this out of the park. He's so good. He's funny. He's personable. He's just, you know, the nuts and bolts part are great, but also the stuff sort of on the periphery is good. The guy knows what he's doing. He really knows. He's telling good stories about stuff. He knows his stats. He knows his history. It's not a knock against Dan, and it's not saying that Dan didn't know this stuff. It's just that, you know, at the end of the day, when you're like, okay, I just listened to a whole baseball game, how did that go? Well, in this particular case, it's going pretty damn well, and I have it on good authority. I have it on very good authority, as a matter of fact, that the other guys like Brad Thompson and Jim Edmonds and whoever else they have wandering in and out of there are all basically saying, yeah, you know, Dan had more than alcoholism. He had anxiety. Maybe that was the problem. The anxiety was leading to the alcoholism. I don't know. And it's good to see Dan up and around and doing some stuff on radio and everything like that while he tries to get his life back together. So this is not a knock against Dan. I'm just saying that if you say, who's the better play-by-play guy? Well, the problem right now is that people are used to Dan McLaughlin after he's been doing it for 20 years. So now you have this new voice in there. And sometimes, just remember, St. Louis hated Jack Buck when he started. Pretty much anybody new who comes in, we hate first. And then you're like, he's not so bad. Or he's gone, like Wayne Hagen. or something like that. It was, you know, it was my understanding that Wayne Hagen was not well liked by Mike Shannon. So whatever. Anyhow, Chip is all over it. And like I said, I'm told that the other guys in the booth, including the crew and everything, are like in a very relaxed, comfortable state these days because they really enjoy the company in the broadcast booth that maybe Dan wasn't always providing because of his problems, his issues that he was having. And that was, you know, perhaps inadvertently, accidentally, not intentionally being transferred onto the other people in the broadcast booth. And it's a huge crew. I don't know, I'm not saying Dan's some bad guy or something. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying that he, you know, he's got his demons, and the demons, so yeah. Have you ever worked with somebody, for example, who's an alcoholic? And I'm not talking about Dan, who's in treatment. I'm talking about somebody who drinks and isn't in treatment. Do you ever work for somebody? Oh, Christ. Do you ever work for somebody whose marriage is coming apart? And the man or the woman, whoever it is just basically mad at the world. I've had a couple of those. Guy got so mad at me, he pulled me off the air. He suspended me from my own radio show just because we had had a disagreement on something in a staff meeting. He was a programmer who I don't think was that experienced, and he came in one day and started making absurd, I would say suggestions, but they were directives. And I'm like, we can't, that won't work. What are you talking about? And I was respectful and everything, but then it started getting heated. And he said, okay, great, leave the meeting. It's like, oh, for God's sakes. No, I want you to leave the meeting. All right, fine, I'll leave the meeting. And I got back home and there was a memo waiting for me that had been pulled off the air because this guy's marriage was falling apart. And his dad was sick. This is a guy who was like something like, I don't know, almost 400 pounds. And greasy, long hair and everything. And what he did is he just decided, I can't get to where I'm going if I look like this. So I don't know how he did it, but he lost, I don't know, like 200 pounds, got a normal haircut, put on a suit and tie, and looked presentable. And it was like that for like 2 or 3 years. And when he lost the programming gig at the radio station, I'm told, I never saw him again, but I'm told he went right back to like 400 pounds and long, greasy hair. This is the guy, by the way. In those days, if you were in management, you got a really nice office. You got a very, very nice office, usually a corner office too. And somebody walked into his office one day, you know, bigger place. We were all in little cubicles or tiny offices or something. You come walking into this semi-ornate office, and this guy I've just been telling you about had his shoes and socks, he's in a suit, had his shoes and socks off and was clipping his toenails in his office. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, I could do a dissertation that would be the length of about 6 podcasts if all I did was talk about people that I had worked for, people who were my bosses, people who ran radio stations, who were above me and pretty much everybody else, who you would not even want in your home. How do you go in the party room and see if Bob would like another hot dog? And you go in there, he's got his shoes and socks off, cutting his toenails in front of everybody. The word antisocial comes to mind. I had an odd evening last night. My daughter's fine, but for a couple of hours, we weren't sure what was going on. She has asthma, and I don't have asthma, but I know people who have it or have had it. And I guess, you know, the sensation of having your throat feel like it's closing up and then maybe opening up, but closing up again is what they describe. And, you know, you can do a certain number of things to alleviate that. And there are drugs and inhalers and stuff like that. And sometimes, you know, you put it all together and it just sort of doesn't work. So we were having a little issue that was combined with a gastrointestinal problem and some other issues, and she ended up in urgent care last night. So I'm sitting in there, and you know, you go through the security guy at the front, and then you got to register, and then they finally take you to a room, and then you sit there, and then 3 or 4 different people come in, ask a bunch of questions. Sometimes they start an IV, and you know, you've been through this whole thing in an emergency room or in an urgent care place. So we're like, okay, fine, we've done all that. We're there for like 45 minutes, almost an hour. And finally somebody says, okay, well, the doctor will be right in. I was like, oh, silly me. I thought maybe these people all have been doctors, but apparently they're nurses' aides. So finally, there's a knock on the door, and it's like, oh, the doctor is coming in. And by the way, she was very, very good, extremely personable, great bedside manner. You know, when you're dealing with a 13-year-old and her father, there's things. Well, first of all, they have to get over the shock. Well, what is your relationship to this girl? It's like, I'm her father. And then they look at you like, you're old. I'm like, yeah, isn't it cool? So so you get through all that. So the doctor comes walking in after the knock, walks in, and she has one arm. And when something like that happens, you're sort of in shock, and you're trying not to look at it because it was cut off right below the elbow, maybe an inch. And I couldn't tell if it was the result of a birth defect or if it was an accident. I have no idea. I've told this story before. I used to have to travel with a one-armed guy when I was doing college sports radio play-by-play. And, you know, you would fly into the city where you were going to be reporting on the football game or the basketball game, whatever it was, because we were with the college radio station. And this other guy named Russ Piggott, he was the play-by-play guy for the town radio station. And then you had a couple of sports writers, you know, for the local paper and then the student paper. And you had to bring an engineer along with you because you were doing radio and it's very complicated and everything. So we would have a group of people. Sometimes it would be six people. Sometimes it would be four. But you'd have a carload of people. And so we would just share a car. You'd get a big car or a van. This is the 70s, okay? You get a big car or a van, and everybody would travel together, and you sort of split the cost. And then the university would reimburse you, so because you had a per diem. So the guy, I guess, when he was really young, had an accident. It was a farming community in DeKalb, Illinois. You guys know what it is. It's a corn country out there. And apparently he was little. He stuck his arm in a combine or something, and it just ripped it right off. So he had nothing. I think he had just like a little thing on his shoulder, and that was it. The whole arm was gone. And this motherfucker smoked, and he always insisted on driving. So not only do I need a chest x-ray after driving with this guy, we're all just choking from the smoke, but also Russ decides he's got to drive. He's got one arm, and he's smoking. And to watch this guy hauling ass down a highway in West Virginia with all of us in the car while he's driving with his leg and trying to light a cigarette with one arm. That's like trying to clap with one arm. But he did it. He always insisted on driving. I'm sitting in the back seat going, I'm too young to die. So anyhow, this doctor comes in, and you're trying everything you can not to look at it because it's just a little stump. Like I said, it was cut off right at the elbow. And I'm very curious, and I found that if you pose the question in a sensitive manner, people will talk to you about what happened. Were you born this way? Was it an accident? I got a real good friend who was born without a left eye. He's got to answer questions about it all the time. There's a guy on radio in St. Louis who has one leg. I don't know how he lost the leg. I have no idea. I don't know the guy well enough to ask. Go up to him and ask him. But like I said, the doctor was quite good. Had a terrific bedside manner. You know, dealing with a 13-year-old doesn't really know what's happening to her. And but the thing that I found curious was when she came in the room, you know, whenever a doctor comes in the room and they start, you know, actually doing stuff, what do? They put on rubber gloves. So she puts on the rubber glove on one hand and then puts a rubber glove on the stump. Even though that thing is not capable of doing anything, it's not long enough. There's no fingers on it or anything. It's just a stump. And she put the rubber glove on the stump. I'm still trying to figure that out. And again, it's another one. Things where you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, do I ask? Do I not? Should I? Yeah. You know, if I say the wrong thing, it's going to really be embarrassing. How do I handle this? I just got my mouth closed and went on. And my daughter was sort of hyperventilating. Her blood pressure was way up. And so, you know, you're trying to distract her or something. So I was telling her stories about stuff. And I told her the story about Jack Hanna being on David Letterman one night. Jack Hanna was the director of the Columbus Zoo. And if you were a fan of Dave, you remember Jack coming on the show all the time and bringing very, very unusual, very, very exotic animals, and they would travel with these things from Columbus, Ohio to New York. I don't know how they did it. I don't know if they did it in a van or flying these things. I have no idea, but it must have been a tremendous undertaking to do that. And they would have Jack on like two or three times a year. It would always bring these animals in, and he would be bumbling around like he didn't know what he was doing. And it would always be very, very funny. And occasionally, you know, all you had to do was have a marsupial of some sort come out and just take a big dump in front of the desk, or something would just start going wild or be giving dirty looks to the director or something. You have these monkeys who would come out and they would see somebody standing next to a camera and just decide they didn't like the looks of that person. And they would start showing their teeth and everything. It was they were always really, really fascinating segments. And some of the animals they brought on were amazing creatures. You just look at them going, I've never seen anything like that. So anyhow, the story goes on. I was telling this to my daughter last night while she's laying on the gurney there. I said, yeah. And so this guy, Jack Hanna, comes out. And you know that there's like a little web from your thumb. Now it goes like an L and comes up to your index finger. Okay, that area right there. And there's like a tendon. It's like a little web sort of. All right. So Jack Hanna is doing something during this presentation on Letterman's show. And this animal, whatever it is, bites him right there. And apparently it was a really good bite. And this thing started shooting out blood. It looked like the Bellagio. And they're like, oh, Christ, look at that. So like, you're going to have to go to the emergency room. That's a serious bite there. That's a serious thing. Yeah, and it's bleeding like a son of a bitch. Somebody get a towel, wrap the towel around this thing, and try to elevate it a little bit. So Jack wraps a small towel around this bite, around his hand, and then holds his hand toward his chest. They take him to the emergency room. By the time they get there, there's blood all over his arm, all over the towel, and all over his shirt because he's been holding his hand, trying to elevate it. He's been holding it against his chest. So they come walking into the emergency room, and as soon as they walk in, everybody in the emergency room starts yelling, gunshot wound! Gunshot wound! Get him into the OR immediately! Because that's what it looked like. They're like, no, no. A ring-tailed lemur bit him on the hand. And they're like, what? So that killed off a couple of minutes last night while we were waiting to be taken care of. Still can't figure out that rubber glove on the stump. 205,000 people over the last three nights here in the Central Florida area went to see Taylor Swift. One of the people in the crowd was Billy Joel and his whole family. I have a friend who's an airline pilot, former, you know, commercial jetliner guy. He's retired now. So now he just flies for fun. And he took somebody in his family, wanted to see the show. So they hopped on a plane at Spirit of St. Louis Airport, flew down here to Tampa, landed, got some tickets and went. And that's when you're living life the right way. I'm not saying because it was Taylor Swift. I'm saying because you made somebody in your family incredibly happy, gave them a memory that they'll never forget. I remember on my 13th birthday, I was up in Wisconsin, and I had a uncle who flew planes for Kimberly-Clark, the paper products people. They made like hankies and stuff. He said, come on, let's go for a flight. So him and my dad and me, we got in this little Cessna and we went flying around. And what they didn't tell me is they were flying me over Lambeau Field where the Bears and the Packers were right in the middle of a game. We flew right over the stadium on my 13th birthday there for the Bears-Packers game in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Never forget that. That was better than going to the game. Remember these two words, bar and taco. Now, I think Mission Taco does a fine job. I think their food is good. I think the atmosphere is great. The margaritas are some of the best in town. And there's multiple locations, and everybody's happy. And you have to explain to people that when you say taco, these are street tacos. This is not Taco Bell with ground beef and, I don't know, some pico de gallo, maybe some cheese, and a traditional Mexican taco. These are street tacos, Baja fish, some sort of seasoned skirt steak or something like that. So, you know, they're just, for a lot of people, unusual if you've never been there before. Like, these are tacos? And they're so small, they're so cheap. They're only like $3 or $4 a piece. It's sort of like explaining to somebody, you go to Katie's Pizza okay, it's pizza, but if it's not Dewey's, okay, it's not like your choice of sausage or pepperoni. There's a whole nother thing going on at Katie's Pizza. But the two words are bar and taco. For the last, I don't know, year and a half or so, once a week pretty much, we've been going to this place. I didn't even know until recently that they were syndicated. In other words, that it's a nationwide thing. For example, I have a daughter living in the Atlanta area, and there are four bar tacos in Atlanta. There's only one down here in Florida, but I'm telling you, they're coming. And when they're coming, watch out. I mean, for years, everybody who's ever been to Portillo's, or if you're from Chicago or something like that, you're like, come on, what's it gotta, what do we gotta do to get a Portillo's down here? I think eventually there will be a Portillo somewhere in St. Louis. They just haven't said. But one of these days, Bar Taco is coming into St. Louis, and it is going to change your life. That's all I can tell you. These people really have it down. I had a bowl of gazpacho. That's the cold tomato soup with the big chunks of tomato and everything in it. That was as good a gazpacho as I've ever had in my life. And then you have these little tacos and the margaritas. I don't know how they get them so smooth. You know, for years, my wife and I, what we did is we interrogated people. Every time we went to a place that had a decent margarita, we just have this appreciation for margaritas. Every time we go to a place that had a decent margarita, and that would include places like Mission Taco. And what got us really started on the journey was the margaritas at Amigos Cantina in Kirkwood. Like, wow, are these things good? So we just kept plugging away, trying to find out what a little information we were able to find out. And, you know, people aren't dumb. They're not going to tell you everything. They might tell you some of it just to make you happy, but they're not going to give you the recipe, for God's sakes. So it took about 10 years to the point now where the margaritas that we make, I think, are world class. And there are secrets. You know, there's secrets. You wouldn't think that half an orange would be involved. And yes, there are secret ingredients that I'm not willing to share with you. But like I said, one of these days a Bar Taco is coming in, and you're going to drink the smoothest margarita you have ever had in your life. I don't know how they do it, but you will have the smoothest margarita of your life. And I haven't bothered to look it up, but like I said, if you're going to Atlanta for some reason, there's four locations there. And just remember that name, Bar Taco. My God, they really know what they're doing. Battlehawk stopped playing yesterday. It got down to about that 4-minute mark. Too many interceptions. So many missed tackles. I don't know. Some of the luster seems to be coming off of the Battlehawks. You know, another 33,000, which is down a couple of thousand. But, you know, there's a baseball game going on at the same time. So a lot of people probably would have gone to the football game had there not been a Cardinal baseball game. Would have jacked that up, and it would have been over 35,000 again. But I'll tell you, the network guys really love St. Louis. Man, do they love St. Louis, because they're digging the fact that this is, in a lot of ways, the most exciting franchise on a lot of different levels. And they're like, see, look, there's people actually here. Look, they need to turn down the hype a little bit. Because they're really, really hitting us with a lot of this stuff. Can you believe how exciting this is? And like, all right. You wouldn't hear that in an NFL game. But this is the upstart league. And on many levels, it is understanding that I'm sure the network guys have told the announcers, really, really hype all of this. And truth be known, and this has been documented, by the way, it's been documented, it's not just some wild rumor. Back in the early days of ABC Monday Night Football with Howard, Dandy Don, and Frank, and initially Keith Jackson, they would always pan around the crowd during the game, and there would be all these posters, these giant posters that people were holding up, talking about what a jack-off Howard Cosell was. And, you know, and during the game, the director would get shots of these people holding up these signs. Well, it took a couple of years, but we finally found out the network was making those signs. The network was making the Howard Cosell signs and then giving them to people, or having staff go out there and then holding them up during the course of the game, because Howard was so controversial. And ABC figured out, this is actually really good, because this is one of those things that people don't understand. And it's true in radio as well. Just because people don't like you doesn't mean they're not going to listen. In fact, a big chunk of any radio station's audience. I'm talking about radio personalities who actually do things. I'm not talking about the guy who goes partly cloudy at the airport, and I don't know anybody who lives at the airport. Here's Sheena Easton. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about people like me, for example, who are always trying to be, you know, provocative, rocking the boat, just talking about cool stuff and expressing lots of opinions. And if you do that, particularly if you do it for, what, almost 39 years now, at some point, at the end of the 39 years, you will have probably pissed off everybody at one point or another. And this is what people don't get. Really, really stupid people like these dolts I was having to work for the last 5 years down there in, you know, down near Perryville, that just because they say they don't like you does not mean they're not going to listen. They're all listening. You know how many people that absolutely despised Rush Limbaugh listened almost every day? I don't understand the phenomenon, but it's a real thing. And everybody who's smart in this business knows that dichotomy exists. So don't get too mad at the XFL if it seems like they're overhyping, because the big boys did it way back when and we know about it now. Oh, speaking of sports, and that was the name of Howard Cosell's daily piece, by the way, for the ABC Radio Network. The Mets at Oakland. Now, you know the Oakland story. Nobody's showing up. They had a game the other day, 3,400 people. And there's been a lot of rumors about the team moving somewhere, possibly Las Vegas. And now Utah, Salt Lake City, is trying really hard to get in the way and say, no, don't go there. Come here. Look what we have. You're John Rooney one day going, hello again, everybody. Here we are at beautiful Osmond Stadium in Salt Lake City. And it is odd, and you'll understand why it's odd in a moment, that we're talking about the Oakland Athletics, because at the old barn, the arena was on Oakland. And we every once in a while we'd play the clip of Bob Plager talking about the contests that they would have at the old barn there, because not only did the Blues play there, but the Blues offices were all there, and the place was just falling apart. Sometimes people would go in and go, you know, is this one of the elite stadiums? Does this have all the amenities that the newer places have? Absolutely not, but it had its charm. There's a lot of people who believe that the Blues should have never left the arena, and that there was an energy in that place that has never been able to be duplicated in the new place. But trust me, you didn't want to be in there. I mean, there was water shooting out from all over the place. The toilets didn't work in a lot of places throughout the building. There were rats the size of a Prius running around the place. And there were giant cockroaches all over. I often said that when they finally did implode the place, you know, out of the rubble, there was going to be a giant, like, two-story rat that was going to emerge from the rubble and just go waddling down Highway 40, you know, swatting cars out of the way. Ugh, get out of the way. And Busch Stadium was like that, too. The parts of Busch Stadium that you could see looked very nice. You walk around and go, why do they want to tear this place down? Look how nice it is. It's still beautiful. And the Cardinal organization, in fact, did everything in their power, I think, to make the parts of Busch Stadium that you saw every day look really, really nice. I mean, the team has a storied history and a lot of pride, and so they made sure that when you came into the ballpark, you had a pleasurable experience. The problem is, again, like the old barn, the Cardinals' executive offices were in the old Busch Stadium, and that's where you had your problems. Again, there's something about toilets and plumbing that just seems to be a problem everywhere when you're talking about aging buildings. And every time it would rain, there would be water shooting around all over the place. They did not have the capacity, the way the place was built, out of just blockhouse type concrete, as the technology that became available, like computers and fiber optics and things like that, they couldn't even get that stuff wired into the place, because you'd have to drill through dozens and dozens and dozens of, like, 8-foot wide concrete blocks, and it just wasn't practical. It couldn't be done, and so everybody was glad to get out of there. There's people who still don't understand, and they think that Busch Stadium, the old Busch Stadium, could have been still used for Cardinal baseball much longer than it was. And again, that's because Cardinals made sure that the parts of the stadium that you saw looked nice. Milwaukee was another one. Milwaukee, we were doing an interview with Bob Uecker the last year that they were at County Stadium in Milwaukee, and Bob Uecker was hilarious talking about all the rats running around all over the place. I bring all that up because the New York Mets, we have a brand new stadium, or newer stadium, were playing in Oakland the other day. We're playing Oakland the other day, and the A's don't have enough trouble.
You're not in the regular visitors' television booth tonight. 3-0 to Guillorme.
I know. I came here and went to the booth, and people grabbed me, almost tackled me, and pushed me into this booth.
So when we came here last September, we were told the tale of the Ring Central Coliseum possum, who apparently makes a home, there's ball four and Guillorme's on, makes a home in the visitors' TV booth. The Angels played here at the beginning of the season. They were the first team in, and Wayne Randazzo, okay, our friend, is now the television voice of the Angels, and he told us that in the opening game of the season, the possum, who apparently lives somewhere in the wall behind that visitors' TV booth, made an appearance during the game in their booth.
Was it like nibbling at him, or?
It was just, crawling around.
Like a cat.
Minding
would.
Its own possum business, walking across the counter. I mean, he wasn't, trying to horn in on the broadcast. He was just doing his possum thing. Anyway, so they set traps for this possum, but he's proved elusive. And now the A's had been on the road. They were on the East Coast. They came from Baltimore, where they played yesterday. So nobody's been in that booth for a few days. And that's a way to Nito and Caprillion really digging a hole for himself. Two walks and now 2-0. So when our tech people walked into the booth, because it takes a lot to set up a booth for a broadcast, right, especially a road broadcast, because, our equipment isn't in there and they have to put everything together, the audio and the video and everything. So they walk in the booth and immediately were met by the stench.
What?
Of the possum having, done his business in the booth.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So apparently the booth reeked so badly of possum leavings,
yes,
that an executive decision was made to move us to this booth, which is somewhat smaller and has, a few impediments, like there's a pole right in front of me. See, there's a pole right here. Yeah.
See, no pole there.
No pole there.
But a possum there.
You can see there.
So we had to choose between possum and pole.
And I chose pole.
Okay.
Maybe the possum was attracted by the smell of pond scum. Who knows? All right, late night tonight, Chris Evans and Andrew Lloyd Webber. I'm with Jimmy Fallon, Amanda Pete. Pops up with Jimmy Kimmel. Stephen Colbert has Josh Groban and Cheryl Lee Ralph. Seth Meyers is on with James Corden. And Seth Meyers will not be on his own show because he's on James Corden. Super Mario Brothers movie. $87 million. That is another $87 million at the box office over the weekend. Renfield, the Nicolas Cage movie, in its opening weekend, $7.7 million. That is the sound of flopping that you hear in the background. Jimmy Kimmel's sidekick Guillermo apologized after two dogs he rescued from a shelter ended up in another shelter. What? And Jordan Klepper hosts The Daily Show all week. That is definitely worth my time and probably yours. Kelly Clarkson's new album is called Chemistry and includes a guest appearance by Steve Martin. It's coming out in June. All right, birthdays today from the girl with the dragon tattoo. Rooney Mara is 38. Victoria Beckham, that would be your Posh Spice, at 49. Jennifer Garner, 51. Adam McKay, the guy who directed and wrote Anchorman, Talladega Nights, all that stuff with Will Ferrell, 55. Norman Boomer Esiason, 62. Nick Hornby, the British author who wrote High Fidelity, About a Boy, and Fever Pitch, is 66. Olivia Hussey, the Juliet of the 1968 version of Romeo and Juliet, is 72 today. And Jan Hammer, the Czechoslovakian composer of the Miami Vice theme, among other things, 75 today. It was 17 years ago today, Melissa Etheridge announced that she and her partner were expecting twins. She gave birth to the twins in October of 06. Melissa already had two kids with her previous girlfriend, Julie Seifer, who were conceived thanks to the donated Joy Juice of David Crosby. And an explosion at a farm in Texas left 18,000 cattle dead. Asked to describe the scene, the first responder said, "Delicious." And with that in mind, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Monday, April 17th, 2023 is in the can. You got like over 10 extra full minutes here today. We're here every weekday morning at 11. Please spread the word if you can. Email JC at jconline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with JC Corcoran. Have a great day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.